Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me today is, well, nobody actually. This is a bit of an experimental podcast. Generally, you know, these things are not meant to be solo efforts. One expects a little back and forth, some point, counterpoint, or at least verbal nods of agreement between multiple people on one of these podcasts. Although, at the same time, I do believe there have been and continue to be podcasts out there that are just one-person deals. Technically, I was thinking about this, one can say there actually was one like that sort of here. I call it the infamous podcast where I set out to drunk cast an episode of the TV series Gotham. The idea was that I'd continue to drink while recording myself watching something that I had ranted about hating oh so very much. I figured it would be like a curse-laden episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000. That was my concept, at least. However, I do believe Dan and I recorded like intro and outro segments for the podcast, and we kind of bookended them around what I assumed was going to be me recording my hate watch or drunken hate watch. Also, as memory serves, it actually wasn't all that bad. I don't mean the podcast, I mean the actual episode I was watching. I think it didn't really start to piss me off until the last quarter of it, where they did something which just ticked me off, and then I started really ranting at that point. But before that, it wasn't so bad. So it wasn't quite what I had in mind, even though I've heard it came out pretty well. You know, hey, that's what she said. Anyway, back to the podcast you actually are tuning in or clicking on to listen to. I literally had this idea in the wee hours of the night, Friday, Saturday, one of those days, because I was looking back on the past week of, there was kind of an excess of comic book related fare that I had torn through. And I kind of figured, what the hell? Now, the one good thing about doing this alone, hey, I can record it. And if I hate it, I can do it again, or I can just scrap the whole idea. And that way I haven't wasted anybody else's time beyond my own. And I will confess, earlier today, I did message a bit back and forth with Dano earlier. He's actually vacationing with his kids and celebrating his daughter Danara's birthday. So happy birthday, Danara. He literally sent me a pic of them right after he had dropped the kids off at the pool. And that is probably the only time I'll use that phrase when I actually do mean young adults in a man-made body of water meant for swimming. However, he did pass on a few comments that I'll add to the first segment that we'll get to shortly. So that way I can say he is here in spirit, if not in, what do we call what we do? I don't know, vocalized snark or something. So, I'm essentially going to run down a number of things here. I will try to note the times and chapters in the description that you'll see wherever you're checking this out in podcast form on Facebook or on the hosting site or wherever. So when I hit a series or topic you don't really give two fucks about, you can just fast forward to something you do want to hear. Although, if I may, honestly, I would say, you know what? Listen to the whole thing. You may really find yourself either A, wanting to give something a chance based on what I have to say, or at least you might be moderately entertained as I alternate between, what should I call it? My jeers and cheers for almost everything I'm going to talk about here. Cheers and jeers, geez. Hey man, remember cheers and jeers in TV Guide? Wow. Man, remember TV Guide? Anyway, let's kick things off with the latest eagerly awaited Marvel series on Disney Plus, and that would be the animated anthology series, What If? And right off the bat, let me say I'm already going to be a sucker for anything, any series, any movie, any whatever, that actually features an ellipse in the title. I'm a writer who is always in love with dashes and ellipses. You know, it's my way of circumventing, you know, actual grammar. Anyway, as many, if not many of you must know already, the concept of What If is taken from what was a long-running comic book over at Marvel Comics, which would essentially come up with any number of hypothetical head scratchers that we could then see be played out in the, you know, the wonderful world of four color panels. By that I mean comic books, if I'm not getting too highfalutin, I hope. Anyway, these stories could run the gamut. You know, it could be creepy ideas like, what if Spider-Man had continued to mutate? Or what if the Thing and the Beast continued to mutate? Or, you know, or something like, what if the Fantastic Four didn't get their powers? Or what if they got different powers? And a lot of stories tend to be, what if certain iconic characters had lived? What if they had died? You know, you might get some really cool ideas, like, what if Conan walked the Earth today? Or something really dumb and silly, like, what if the original Marvel creative team, back when they used to call it the Marvel bullpen, you know, like in the 60s and such, what if they had become the Fantastic Four? So yes, what if Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, etc. had become the Fantastic Four? So obviously the possibilities of what if could be were almost limitless. And sure, there were probably just as many clunkers as there were slam dunkers for that title, but it was a crazy fun concept that accomplished in the short term, you know, single issue stories, what their distinguished competition, which is what Marvel used to sometimes refer to DC as, did in their Elseworlds stories that could either be single one-off or one-shot stories, or sometimes more extended multi-part or crossover events. Actually, there are some examples of Marvel doing that as well. You know, I mean, God knows how many issues they wrung out of the whole Marvel Zombies concept alone, among others. Anyway, so when I heard they were going to do an animated series based on What If, I was thrilled. And when I saw the first quick peek at what the animation and art was going to look like, I got even more excited. You know, it's especially since Marvel, look, they may have become the rock'em sock'em go-to for live-action superhero cinema over the last decade plus. And, you know, with that one animated Spider-Verse flick accepted because that was amazing, no pun intended because it's Spider-Man. But as far as, generally speaking, as far as their continuing animated series and projects of that nature, their efforts often lagged kind of way behind DC over the past 30 years. And that's in terms of art, in terms of story, and even in terms of vocal talent. Now, look, before I rile any Marvel fans up, I am not saying every Marvel product stunk. That's not true. There were definitely some goodies to be found in there. But when you compare it overall to just the Batman, Superman, and Justice League animated series alone, there's no comparison. So with this series, we kicked off this past week with What If Captain Carter Was the First Avenger? And that actually takes us back to the first Captain America movie and posits, what if circumstances in that lab, you know, when Steve Rogers was about to receive the super soldier serum and he gets that whole, I call it the Charlie Atlas treatment, which pretty much tells you how old I am, because probably anyone under 30 doesn't know what I'm talking about, maybe even under 40. That's when you go from a 98-pound weakling to, like, you know, super buff muscle guy, or in Steve Rogers' case, to Captain America. But what if something went wrong? Or right, depending on your perspective, and it turned out to be Peggy Carter who got injected with the stuff superhero dreams are chemically composed of. Now, the way this story plays out, I'm going to say right off the bat, I think the execution was done pretty flawlessly, as the resulting story revolves around how a woman would fare as the first superhero fighting across enemy lines, at least in the Marvel Universe, and how that would both differ as well as parallel what we know Steve Rogers did as Captain America. One fun idea along the way is based on the designs and genius of Howard Stark, you know, Tony's dad. Steve joins the fight wearing a massive suit of robotic armor, which is clearly meant as a precursor to Iron Man. Because it looks an awful lot like the early versions that Howie's son, Tony, is going to dream up decades from now, or where we're in the story. I'm also going to point out, it's also kind of a bit of a wink and a nod to the DC sidekick character, Stripe, which is actually spelled out S-T-R-I-P-E. I'm not going to tell you what those letters stand for, because it's not really relevant for what we're talking about here. But that was a robot powered by sidekick Stripesy, who would also fight alongside a better-known patriotically-themed hero, the way Steve is doing here with Captain Carter. Now, much like the movie, we still tap into the Red Skull and Hydra, and the story kind of has a little bit more fun with it by having an interdimensional creature that, for all intents and purposes, is an actual Hydra, which all leads to Captain Carter. ending up 70 plus years into the future, kind of just like Steve Rogers, except for her, it happens in the blink of an eye through that same interdimensional portal that the creature was coming out of, rather than being frozen on ice for all those years the way Steve Rogers was. So story-wise, definitely solid. The writing, look, it's as good as you'd want or expect it to be for a top-tier animated series. Now, personally, I felt there were a couple missed opportunities here. I mean, look, it was cute when Bucky makes a comment about losing his arm, but seriously, if they stick with the idea of bringing Captain Carter back for later seasons of What If, I feel you have to have Steve Rogers show up as the Winter Soldier. I mean, come on. How do you not do that? How do you not even hint at that? I kind of suspect they will. I think it's too good an idea not to do, you know, especially since they didn't show Peggy encountering a 90-year-old Steve Areno at the end of this episode. Now, I'm about to go into just my very basic, quick color-by-numbers checklist here, but I mentioned earlier Dan had some comments. This is the one show I'm going to talk about that he has seen, of course, What If. So let me get his comments on the record. Let me see what he says here. Let me look it up here. Okay, here he goes. And I'm not going to do an impression of him, so don't worry. He says, I appreciate Marvel using the actors for the animated characters rather than recasting. And I wondered if Captain Carter, not wearing a mask, had something to do with people of her gender being disregarded during that time period. Okay, Dan. Well, you know what? I do agree with you first about the voice casting. I mean, whoa, just going over the vocal talent lined up for this series. Are you kidding me? Even if some of the heavy hitters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe were, for whatever reason, unable to record for the series, you know, your Robert Downey Jr.'s, your Chris Evans's, pretty much everyone else is on board. So in this first installment, yeah, you got Haley Atwell and Sebastian Stan and Stanley Tucci and so on. Hell, we even got Bradley Whitford in the mix, and that can never be a bad thing. So that's a huge check mark there. But let me get back to what Dan was saying. He had said something about the not wearing a mask and speculating how it might be all about how women were often disregarded in that time period. Okay, you know, there could be some truth there. Absolutely, I suppose. I mean, I got to put aside that the most famous female superhero of the 1940s would be DC's Wonder Woman, who obviously didn't wear a mask. And while Black Canary oh so briefly wore one, she soon abandoned it as well. And then you got Mary Marvel of the Shazam family back then also never wore a mask. But all the others that do come to mind, that at least off the top of my head, your Hawk Girls, Bullet Girl, Phantom Lady, I believe they all had some form of a mask. So, but you know what? That doesn't matter because it's not what Dan is driving at. It's not about comic book history. I think he is right that they're making a statement with the Captain Carter character, because not only is she not wearing a mask, what I would add to that, she also isn't taking on a superhero codename alias either. No secret identity. She is who she is. She's Captain Carter. And that is far more interesting and unique and really kind of a nice little subversive and subtle way of striking a blow for women. So I think that goes, you know, right hand in hand with the fact that she's not wearing a mask. Okay, so that said, now I'm going to get back to that little mini checklist I had mentioned, what I'd be looking for with an animated series, you know, after vocal talent. I guess I got to go to art. And I already mentioned how much I liked it. So let me go a little bit more in depth here, because I knew that was a plus going in. When I first was watching it, I thought maybe they were doing a form of rotoscoping here, which is normally involving the process of animating over live action. A very famous example some of you may have seen would be the Richard Linklater film that came out about 20 years ago, Waking Life. Gorgeous experiment in animation. It's total rotoscoping. It's actually worth watching just for that reason alone. But between the insane cost it would take to really do that fully, plus the fact that one might quibble with the way the dialogue doesn't always quite sync up cleanly with the moving mouths in this series, I get the impression it might look a little rotoscopy, but it ain't. Now, I looked a little bit more into it. The creators cited a number of influences on their chosen shaded cell animation style that they use here that almost has a 3D quality to it. I mean, they claim that they've patterned it after the likes of Norman Rockwell and J.C. Leyendecker. Some folks might not know who that is. He's the famous illustrator who, like Rockwell, did a number of famous Saturday Evening Post covers and a lot of advertising and illustrations from the first half of the 20th century that have a very luminescent, not quite lifelike, but just a hair different quality to them. Kind of like Norman Rockwell, but with a bit more of a slick edge to them, if anything. And the thing that you can't deny, they also cite the early work of Disney. And I'm thinking the sort of style that you would see in films like Fantasia, or maybe Lady and the Tramp, or actually Dumbo even, quite frankly. However, I do think they're being just a little bit disingenuous by going through all these names and things that they throw out there, but they skip what I feel is the most obvious influence of all. Maybe they're doing that because that work is so tied to DC. Hopefully they're not being silly but like that. But come on. Anyone who's familiar with it knows that their style they did for this episode and the series overall is clearly inspired, almost literally draws upon the style and fluidity of what Max Fleischer did with these gorgeous Superman cartoons of the 1940s. I mean, I'm sorry, it's undeniable. So basically, story, check. Art, check. What's left? Under normal circumstances, with almost any other animated series or movie or whatever, that would be it. Already talked about story, art, vocal talent, you know, bing, bang, boom, Bob's your uncle, rave, 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 let's just move on. But I haven't criticized anything about the series, and I only have one little nitpick. Not sure if it's a nitpick, it's just something I think is unfortunate. And it's I'm really relating it not specifically to this episode, it's more about how I see how the series has been configured and planned out. It's a double-edged sword. It's because the series is intrinsically tied to the MCU. And I don't mean the very canny and well-done planning of having this series launch just essentially a month after Loki ended, which, as we know, opened the world of multiple alternate realities for the MCU moving forward. You know, WandaVision hinted at it, Loki went out and did it. And I actually had hoped there would be some nod to this in the introduction of What If, but not really. You know, there might have been the most subtle allusion, but Jeffrey Wright, as the voice of the Watcher, who, by the way, just for comic book geeks, let's be honest, doesn't the Watcher look a lot more like Eternity, one of the cosmic entities from Marvel Comics here? You know, the Watchers have already been depicted in one of the MCU things. I think it might have been Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I think we get a little peek at a Watcher in there, that one. I think it's with Stan Lee, in fact. Anyway. But they didn't really say anything directly that looked like a tie-in to anything that happened with the Time Variance Authority or Loki or Kang or Immortus, whatever the hell his name is. But not a big deal. But the problem I'm having is by having What If confined to the MCU, they are drastically limiting the scope of what could have been and should be endless possibilities. Because now, as it stands, you cannot do any story that involves ex-anyone, unless it's somebody's ex-girlfriend. Nothing that's actually connected to the Fantastic Four either. And those two major Marvel properties alone were the basis of so many great What If stories. Not to mention a number of other characters. I mean, hey, forget Conan, I mentioned him earlier, and so many more that they haven't gotten to, because they've made it clear that they do not want to use any Marvel characters that have not already been introduced in the MCU. But they can apparently create entirely new ones. And my reaction to that is, what the fuck are you talking about? So basically, you're telling me if you do a What If episode with an Avengers storyline, you can't feature an Avenger who hasn't popped up yet in the movies, or a villain for that matter, but you can just make one up instead? I'm sorry, but I think that's pretty lame. It's like being handed a big 64-pack of Crayola crayons, and then it's like, nah, and they only shake out, here's 14 of them, you can just use these. The other 50... these are not for you. Oh, yeah, you can't use the sharpener either. Bye. So that's it. But that's really my only issue with What If as of right now. I'm sure my opinions will waver a bit from episode to episode, and I am curious how far Disney Plus will allow them to go with one of the later episodes that they actually are going to get into the Marvel zombies. Because if you cut down or even completely remove the shocking, violent, and gore aspect of that, I really don't see what the point of doing it at all is. But we shall see. Okay, so let us move on to what is next. What is next? Well, there were some DC series that returned this past week, so let me knock them off one by one. And the one we're going to kick off with is Titans Season 3, which debuted on HBO Max last Thursday with three episodes that were immediately available, and I assume the rest of the season will be doled out on a weekly basis. Now, Titans is one of those shows back when it was originally on the DC Universe streaming site, and what a debacle that was. I think they probably had as many subscribers as our podcast has listeners. No, I kid us both. Anyway, it didn't exactly get rave reviews when it premiered. It was more known as the show with the clip of, you know, an older Robin saying, fuck Batman, and really not much else. And then, over the course of several weeks, a funny thing happened. Some people, they kept watching it. Somehow, the series started to get a little bit of momentum. It started to kind of work. Got better. And once HBO Max showed up and actually made Titans available to watch for a considerably larger potential audience than had access to DC Universe, blah, 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 the rest of us were all like, hey, this isn't half bad. In fact, some of it is pretty damn good. So that's where we were with this series when Season 3 arrived this week. They had already previously touched on some major stories from the comics with their own little spin on them, or big spin, I should say. You know, whether it be the classic Judas contract story with Deathstroke that they clearly lifted certain elements from, or the Cadmus Superboy story that they incorporated into the show, and so on. And the story they're almost audaciously lifting from to start this season is the infamous Death in the Family storyline. You know, the one where dumbass readers like me voted on whether a character should live or die. And because society is always about the bloodlust, of course we overwhelmingly voted to kill off that snot-nosed punk, Jason Todd. And voila, he got beaten to death with a crowbar by the Joker, no less. Now, the Joker part would be the first reason you'd think they would avoid that storyline. But nope. They did it without ever truly even showing him. So kudos on getting away with that one. And they continued to go down an even darker path by telling us, as apparently they can't show us, that Batman subsequently beats the Joker to death with a crowbar as well. Okay, darky dark dark, but I can go along with it. Okay. All right, I've said this a number of times, and I'm guessing I'm going to be saying it on this podcast as well, with very few exceptions, one of which would be that intense dislike I mentioned earlier about the gun, but I haven't forgotten how stupid you are, Gotham. If you are making a comic book-based TV series or movie, I am okay with making changes from the comics for any number of reasons. You want to do your own thing, but you only want to utilize elements but not entire story arcs. Hey, you know what? That's the basis for almost the entire MCU, as well as the better Batman movies, past and upcoming. I'm generally good with that if it makes the overall story better. Or maybe it's a budgetary concern, because there are some things you just can't possibly realize in the limiting scope of most weekly TV series. You know, a good example is how they tried to do the Crisis on Infinite Earths story on the CW DC shows. It's not like anyone's giving them $500 million to do that story justice, so you have to understand it's going to have a lot of limitations on it. But what I hate, is when changes are made that just make no sense. And I hate when changes are made that just don't work. So we're going to come back to the Titan storyline here. Well, I have a problem with it, and I don't know how to get past it. I don't know if it makes me a hypocrite after what I just laid out there, but I got to point this out. When Jason Todd was killed in the comics, it was in the late 1980s. He was a kid. When he shows up as the, well, more than formidable and positively lethal Red Hood, it was 17 years later. So you imagine the Red Hood is supposed to be, what, late 20s, something like that, 30, 31, somewhere in that range. So number one, he's not a kid anymore. Number two, the dude had 17 years to turn himself into an ultimate warrior assassin, someone who could be on the same tier as a Batman or, say, maybe a Deathstroke. And that made sense because, in a way, it was supposed to be a very dark, twisted take on Batman and Batman's journey going from his childhood and dealing with the unbearable grief and then spending so many years training to become the fighter and detective we know Batman to be. But having a story where Jason Todd shifts to becoming the Red Hood, I don't know, the following day? So essentially he's still a kid, but now he's a psycho killer, a sociopath, who's even slicker than ice and colder. What? I mean, I know, suspension of disbelief, but geez, really? I know we haven't gotten the explanation for how he survived being beaten, broken into little pulpy bits, how he could have possibly gone from a mangled corpse in the morgue to being completely healed. Which, look, it sounds very, very Lazarus pity here, which they kind of reference and then seemingly dismiss. They do make a reference to Ra's al Ghul, I believe. But unless there's some other magic afoot, and who knows, maybe there is, certain magical character isn't on the show yet, because, hey, where is Raven anyway? I'm just very skeptical. I'm super skeptical that we're going to get a proper explanation, not just for how he survived, but how I'm supposed to buy that he could possibly be the Red Hood now. But I will put that aside. Back to my overall take on the series. Look, the biggest problem for me with Titans, and I say this as someone who actually does like the series, and there are times, at times, I have been pretty impressed with it. But the number one issue I have with the show is the casting. And this isn't simply how I've mocked like the DCCW shows at times, because many of which seem they go to the local extras hangout in Vancouver and just toss a net over anyone milling about and boom, there's your latest villain or hero or whoever's going to show up on the show. But even with those series, the main character of any series needs to be well cast, or it just doesn't matter how good or bad the supporting players are. And with Titans, your main character is Dick Grayson. And Dick Grayson, look, I'm talking just the comics before we even get to this. He's never been the flashiest or even the most exciting of characters at this stage of his life. But you know what he represents and what he should mean to this series. He has a special level of gravitas that no other Titan, quite frankly, no one other than maybe Batman or Bruce Wayne, no other character should remotely have on this series. Which means you need to fill that role with someone who is up to that challenge. Someone, let's be honest here, let's be frank here. Well, not frank, but honest. Someone who's got that special it factor that will click with an audience as well as the fellow cast members. I mean, whether you like, love, or loathe the Arrowverse shows, they were able to do that with Stephen Amell and Arrow. They were able to do that with Grant Gustin on The Flash and even Melissa Benoist on Supergirl. But here, this guy, I mean, look, we're on the third season. I still had to go look up his name, Brenton Thwaites. Oh, boy. Oh, look, he's Australian. I did not know that. And don't care. Wow, he's not Canadian. I'm shocked. But look, outside of a few moments here or there, he's kind of been a bore. And yeah, the writers are absolutely accountable here as well. But man, they are dropping the ball with him in this role so far. I mean, it may not be the worst thing in the world, but even with him now being Nightwing, which, by the way, should be super cool to see finally in live action, I'm still kind of eh on him until he freaking wows me already, because that has not happened yet. It could happen, but it hasn't happened yet. And continuing down this road, I also don't love the casting of Starfire. And to be clear, this has zero to do with the diversity of the casting choice here. You know what? Starfire is a bright orange alien. You can make her any damn race you want, and I'm fine with it. And this also might be an issue of the writing of the character rather than the performance. But again, until they pull that off where I can say, whoa, damn, that is Starfire, I remain disappointed. However, that said, I do think they knocked it out of the park with the casting and overall depiction of, say, Connor Kent, Wow. I am not just surprised. I am shocked. Shocked, I tell you, at how much I like how they've handled that. And Joshua Orpin, that's the actor's name. He's in the role. He's perfect. I couldn't ask for anything better for that role. And now that they're finally hinting that Gar, as in Gar Logan, may eventually turn into something other than a damn tiger, beyond that one-and-done snake appearance they almost seem to forget until a brief mention in one of the episodes here, I kind of like where they're going with Gar Logan, and I have zero issues with that casting as well. In fact, I kind of wish they'd focus more on those two characters than either Dick or Starfire. Oh, well, by the way, with Gar, look, I get it. When this was a DC Universe streaming show, budgets were clearly limited, and maybe how much CGI they could really do. And I mean good CGI, not like what we see on certain other shows that are, I'm going to rip apart a little bit later on. But, you know, maybe there'll be limits on how much CGI could really be used. But you know what, guys? Screw that. You're on HBO Max now. You guys can certainly get enough money to have Gar also be able to change into all the other animals. That character, whether you call him Changeling or Beast Boy or just Gar Logan, that he used to be able to change into all the time. A gorilla, an elephant, an owl, whatever. We want to see it. That's what makes that character interesting. Him turning into a green tiger for a couple minutes every episode, not so much. Budgets don't seem to impact how amazing a job they do with Doom Patrol. I don't see why it should be an obstacle here. Oh, and about casting, she hasn't shown up this season as of yet, but I really like how they changed the Raven character from what I was at least familiar with many years ago in the original Titans or Teen Titans stories. I do know that's something that has also changed over the years as well, so I'm kind of going off a version I knew from like 40 years ago as opposed to what's been going on over the last decade or two, but you know, whatever. And what's left? Oh, much like their comic book counterparts, I don't really have a big opinion on Hawk and Dove. Other than, oh, wow, that's Derek Jeter's ex, the one from Friday Night Lights. And I don't care. I could take or leave them. They are what they are. I never care about them as comic book characters. I care about them maybe slightly more as TV characters. But back to these three episodes. If I can get past the current ludicrous nature of doing a teenage Red Hood story, you know what? There were some cool things about these three episodes. Although, for me personally, I found some of the Gotham stuff that they did here, and that I think they even hinted at in previous seasons, I kind of find it a little cringy. And also casting. Do I love the casting of Barbara Gordon? No, not really. I'm curious about her missing leg. I'm very intrigued by that, because that implies that the Joker did a way bigger number on her in this continuity than in the Killing Joke. Although, I don't know if that means that he... Yeah, you know what? Let's not go there. That's a bit more disturbing than I kind of want this podcast to be. But that last episode of the three, you know what? I thought it was pretty damn terrific. Maybe even shocking. I mean, you know, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've already seen it. So spoiler for a minute. Killing off Hank Hall isn't as remotely shocking as all the crap his character went through way back when in the comics. I mean, in the comic books, Hank Hall, you know, Hawk, he actually eventually becomes a supervillain that nearly destroys the DC universe. But, you know, but killing him, I guess it's a bigger deal. I don't know. Now, friend to the podcast, speaking of comments, and person who I suppose I could have asked to co-host this, but I didn't feel like it, you know, because didn't have time. Oh, well. Jason Jones, mentioned on Facebook the other day, he likes it when the show focuses on the Bat Family and really doesn't like it when it focuses on the Titans. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's funny because I think I might feel the opposite. I mean, I will put aside, I do genuinely enjoy the casting of Ian Glenn as Bruce Wayne, even though it's become pretty apparent we will never see him in the role of Batman. We're never going to see him in the outfit or doing anything bat-like. Unless they're going to shock me. It doesn't look like that's where they're ever going to go with this show. And maybe they're just simply not allowed to. I don't know. But like I said before, the Dick Grayson character, he just isn't well written or portrayed. Jason Todd was always an annoying character, and even more so on this series. And I'm not a big fan of that actor as well. And look, I just mentioned, I was kind of underwhelmed by the casting of Barbara Gordon, and I'm pretty meh at best at how Gotham City has been depicted in these, you know, seedier parts of apparently Ontario. But like I said, I really do like Superboy and Gar Logan, and when she returns, Raven. I thought the way they handled Trigon in the first season, and then Deathstroke, and even Dr. Light, for God's sake, I thought all that was done really well. And yeah, I did say I was iffy on Starfire, you know, as far as the writing and casting, but if I'm going to be honest, I've always been iffy on that character, period. Even back when I read the comic, again, you know, a million years ago. So I guess I do feel the opposite way. Hey, look, and the cool thing is when you do a podcast by yourself, solo, hey, you always get the last word. Not that I don't always, anyway. So let's move on. And I'll speed up because I have a little time limit in my head how long I wanted this one to be. Just going to catch up with the other DCCW shows, namely what came back this past week. First, there was the season 2 premiere of Stargirl. And after a truly, truly fun and vibrant first season, which paid due tribute and honor to the Justice Society of America while still managing to appeal to younger newbies as well. And really, you know, they were really doing an excellent job with the villains in particular on that series, in that season, I should say. We kick off the second season. I'm going to say we kick it off with a very slow burn. The episode essentially sets up Courtney's restlessness and wanting to shake every tree in Blue Valley in search of bad guys. Yolanda, meanwhile, she's barely coping with her primary role she played in killing Brainwave. I mean, it was just her, actually. Beth is desperately trying to keep her parents from splitting apart while she's clearly missing the AI of Charlie McKnighter, something fierce. And Rick, well, Rick is clearly hunting down Solomon Grundy in the woods of, you know, the previously mentioned Blue Valley. That is basically sort of most of the first episode in a nutshell, because it ends up with Courtney is going to have to take summer school. And at the end of the episode, we do see the return of Cindy Berman, you know, aka Shiv, you know, she was the daughter of the Dragon King and the heir apparent to heading up a new Injustice Society. At least that's how they're setting it up. And she's not just Shiv. She's got a little purple diamond with her. It's the calling card of the major, major DC supervillain, Eclipso. So like I said, it's a slow burn and setup. We get this delightfully chilling scene to open the episode, which hinted at the evil Eclipso in child form. I've mentioned him a few times. How do I describe Eclipso to people who aren't familiar with him? I would say the dude is basically pure, undistilled evil. Now, it remains to be seen just how powerful they plan to have him be in the series. But in the later years, he's kind of like an evil version of the Spectre. And if you don't know who the Spectre is, I don't know how to help you now. But in the same sense, he's literally the wrath of God level power and abilities. I'm guessing they're probably going to play that down to a certain extent for this series. Because otherwise, I don't see how someone like Stargirl or any of the other kids are going to be able to take on a villain of that nature. But like I said, I think they may play it down a bit. Back to the episode, you know, outside of the annoying song that accompanied the final scene of the episode, I truly have nothing negative to say. And the fact that the things I'm most looking forward to this season, such as the appearance of the Shade. And by the way, it looks like they're really going to do right by that really fantastic character. By the way, if you're into that sort of thing, if you want to get a taste of what that character is really like, or the best possible version of that character, I should say, go to Amazon or your local comic book shop or wherever else and try to track down the trade paperbacks of the James Robinson penned comic book series Starman. Part of me still foolishly hopes somehow that series will somehow tie into this series, but it's probably not going to. And we're also going to be getting the Thunderbolt as well, as in, you know, the Thunderbolt from Johnny Thunder and the Thunderbolt. And I believe, and I think I mentioned on an earlier podcast, that character is supposed to be voiced by Jim Gaffigan until I see or hear otherwise. They actually name-dropped Jakeem in this episode. The more modern version with the Thunderbolt, the kid who... A kid ends up being his... what do we refer to him? That is keeper or caretaker, whatever. The person who's in control of the Thunderbolt is Jakeem or Jakeem Thunder. Since they name-dropped that character in this episode, I'm assuming they're going to bring him on. I thought maybe they were going to use Courtney's brother as that character, perhaps. But I'm actually, I would prefer they use Jakeem. They also seem to hint that something, insidious may be happening or may be planned to happen with Courtney's brother, since he's one of the pictures, photographs that, Cindy plops down on the table, as far as recruiting future Injustice Society members. Now, the same night that Stargirl returned for season two, Superman and Lois also came back after a 3-week hiatus, I think it was, for its final two episodes. Oh, let me point out right now, by the time I release this podcast, which, depending on my energy level, I'm either going to get this out to you Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, which means a lot of you might have already seen the final Superman and Lois, as well as the second episode of Stargirl. I, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, I live in New York, New York City, and those shows would normally be airing on the CW affiliate, WPX Channel 11, at 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock here. However, they are showing a baseball game on Channel 11 tonight. I actually care about that baseball game and will be watching it, so it doesn't really bother me. But as a result, they will not be showing these two episodes until Saturday evening. And they're already in my DVR and scheduled to record. Yes, I could go onto the CW website and watch these episodes a day later and deal with the irritations of the not being able to get past the ads or whatever. But I'm going to be patient and wait till Saturday. Anyway, that's why you're hearing me only talk about those two episodes and why I didn't wait to cover the episodes that are going to air on Tuesday, because I'm in one of the few places that won't be able to see them. Okay, got that out of the way. Where was I? Superman and Lois. Mentioned it had come back after a 3-week hiatus. Look, all I can say about the series is it shouldn't work. And it does. I should not like the casting or the portrayal of Superman and Lois Lane on this series. And yet I do. I should hate the fact that Superman has kids and they're dealing with high school drama. But I've been totally digging it. Honestly, there's so much I would think I would hate about the series, and yet I kind of like just about all of it. I've actually even been emotionally affected by the series a few times. I've been genuinely surprised a few times. The phrase that I keep using online, and now I'm going to use it on this podcast, I think I've said it before. I did when I reviewed the show on one of the Loki podcasts, I believe. I'm just going to say the series is shockingly good, and it really is. Since I did go into the show overall on one of the Loki podcasts, I won't do that here, so I won't talk about the casting and this, that, and the other thing, just as far as this last episode. As of this recording, they only have one episode to go. So it's a little weird. I'm reviewing it up to its penultimate episode, but look, everything I'm seeing on the show, the acting is mostly good, if not great. The characters are certainly likable. Some of them are intriguing enough to really stick with. And the writing, I would say it's at least a notch or two above what some of the other DC, CW, or CWDC, I don't know what order I should put that in, series that have been kind of stagnating on the CW over the past couple seasons. So I would urge people, if you've actually are even listening to this part, those of you who might have given up or just plain avoided shows like Supergirl or The Flash or Legends of Tomorrow, both these shows I just mentioned are considerably better. And let me just lean in a little bit more and so I can tell you what's going on with those other shows. Keep listening. It'll be worth it. Supergirl. Look, putting aside the fact that, yeah, they lean just a bit too heavily on pandering to the woke crowd. Let's be honest, they did. It just hasn't been very good outside of when John Cryer shows up as Lex Luthor. It's coming back in a couple weeks to finish out its season and its series. And you know what? It's time. It's time. And I really love the main character and Melissa Benoit in that role. I think they do really well with that. I don't like that much else anymore. I don't hate it. I'm just kind of about it. And I wish they could have done a better job with it. But at this point, it's like, it's best just to leave. Legends of Tomorrow. Look, man, it can still pull off the occasional really fun episode. It did a few weeks ago where part of it ended up being like a musical number from Disney and animated. It was great. But look, it seems to have really lost a lot of the coolness factor, especially with the overall cast of characters that are on that ship. I mean, when that series started, that first season or two, you had Heatwave and Captain Cold, the Atom, the two people who make up Firestorm, and Sarah Lance. Don't get me started with the stupidity of her being called White Canary. Ugh. And even if they were really horribly portrayed in that first season, you still had Hawkman and Hawkgirl. And don't forget, you had Rip Hunter as well. I mean, that's a really impressive cast of characters, both in terms of what you're drawing on from the DC universe, and as well as the representation of who's there. And it's just like, oh, you mention that to any even remotely geeky person, like, oh, I want to check that show out. And it got even better once we got rid of the Hawks, let's be honest. Now, we fast forward at whatever number of seasons it's been now. You got Sarah. You got Heatwave still, but he seems to be less and less about being Heatwave at all. You know, he's a guy who occasionally uses a flame-throwing gun that never really seems to set anything on fire. It's a weird thing with the CWDC shows. People who have cold powers never seem to actually freeze anything, and people with this fire ability never seem to set anything on fire. It's very dumb. Anyway, who else is in that cast? Oh, we get a guy who's sort of kind of steel, but a character they decided not to call Isis, so I don't know who or what she's supposed to be, or if she's just someone who's just made up for the series at this point, if she's not Isis. And then she's got some stoner brother who she shares the same powerful amulet with, and I'm just like, and then she's got a twin that's her, but I don't know, it's just, what? And then they bring in John Constantine, and I love John Constantine as a character, and I really have always enjoyed Matt Ryan's portrayal of that character until now. John Constantine now is totally neutered. He says and does things and acts in a way which really does not feel true to that character at all. It's just not a very ooh-inspiring lineup, man. I believe every couple of seasons, they should have just jettisoned most of the cast and brought in fresh and new players. Yes, I know I left out some people. There's a reason why. Spooner doesn't even deserve to be talked about. Ava is whatever. I just don't know. Why get away from the whole time police idea? It's the big thing on so many other shows. You can use it on this show, and then you decide not to. When you see it's being on something that we see on Umbrella Academy and Loki, or are you afraid of comparison? So you just abandon it? I don't understand. Like I said, if they just could bring in fresh new players every few seasons, because you've got the entire DC universe at your disposal. There are hundreds of fourth, third, and second tier heroes and villains you could draw from, but you don't. And instead, you get the cast that we end up with, which is a bunch of, huh? You get some really, I'm going to use the word cringe again because there's no other better way to put it, cringe-inducing cheesy CGI effects make the show kind of embarrassing to watch at times. And oh, by the way, what were they thinking with the worst, crappiest opening credit sequence ever? You didn't need to do that. It doesn't make the show better. It makes it embarrassing again. I'm sorry. It's mortifying when I saw that. The music, the look. It's like, I don't know, did a 12-year-old design this? It was horrible. Horrible. Just put the freaking title of the show up like you did before with a little do-do-do-do-do, whatever. That's all we need. Speaking of shows that kind of came up with a bad opening credit sequence, but this one isn't quite as bad, and the big one I haven't gotten to now, and the last one of the CW shows to talk about, is The Flash. Look, man, I still watch it. I'm watching it if I'm only waiting to see when they're going to give him his goddamn yellow boots. But look, the past season was just straight up awful. And in some ways, I kind of feel the series has been on the slow skid since the second season. You know, it's not just, oh, look, another speedster villain. I just feel, being a longtime fan of the character, in his many incarnations over the years, you are shortchanging a massive cast of potential threats and villains that the Flash is so well known for. And you're just making up crap that is just written badly and depicted even worse at times. I mean, seriously, the Flash is a character that most people, you know, in the know, you know, comic book fans and whatever, we all feel that he's got one of the top three or four rogues galleries of villains of all time. You know, right behind maybe Batman and Spider-Man. But what we've seen over the last 5 years is barely any representation of that at all. It makes me really sad. I don't like to pump myself up here, but oh my God, I wish I could write for The Flash because I would redo the show and it would be so good. And the thing is, so many of his characters don't require some crazy special effecty kind of thing that would break the budget of the show. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't understand it. And I don't know if this next season is going to be the final season. I think it is. I've heard some rumors about who's going to be on it. That sounds mildly intriguing. But then again, every time I've heard something that made me intrigued, and then I see it, and I'm like, ugh. So I'm still going to watch it, but I haven't been happy about the show in quite some time. All right, so for me, that kind of ties a bit of a bow on the DCCW. Yes, I know, I didn't mention Batwoman. You know what? I stopped watching it during the first season. It was a total snooze then, so I can't even address them recasting the part or being a different character. I didn't care the first season. I'm not going to care now. There's something about doing anything in the Batverse in these low-rent shows. It just never seems to feel like it's done well, so why bother? Okay, so in my final thing here, what else is coming up? What is coming up? Well, obviously, there's going to be more episodes of What If and Titans and Stargirl. Like I mentioned, Superman Lois is finishing tonight. In fact, it'll be over by the time you've probably listened to this. And Supergirl is coming back soon to be put out of its misery. Beyond that, Doom Patrol. Woohoo! Doom Patrol comes back in late September. And we hope to be covering that one if both Brian and I can fit it into our respective schedules. I do believe the next Disney Plus series after What If, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Hawkeye, and I believe that pops up on the Disney Plus, I think in late November, because What If, I think, ends in early October. I do want to point out to everybody, one of the best, if not the best, non-superhero comics is finally being adapted for television and will be premiering on FX on Hulu on September 13th. And of course, I'm talking about Why the Last Man. It's a knockout series that was originally written by Brian K. Vaughan. It was written back, I think, 2002 to 2007, 2008. Then he went to Lost. Okay, makes sense. He's also the mastermind behind such great comics as Saga and Ex Machina, which is just fantastic and really deserves to be made into a series as well. I bet it will be one day. Many of you might know, as I just mumbled to myself, you might know Brian K. Vaughan as a guy who wrote some of the Lost episodes back in the day. Beyond that, season 3 of The Boys, it's still in production. The same goes for season 3 of Harley Quinn. I honestly do not know what's going on with Umbrella Academy season 3, but I'm sure it is in the stage, some stage of being made, maybe pre-production. I don't know. I haven't heard about them filming it as of yet. But I could be out of the loop on that one. I apologize. I think I'll pull the plug on it there because you'll notice for the sake of time and sanity, I'm sticking with TV series. I didn't want to get into a whole thing about Suicide Squad. But since now that I've mentioned it, okay. Outside of a few, and by a few I mean two, let's just call them, because I do like both people. I'll just call them two oddball outliers who said or think otherwise. And actually, one was very negative. The one was just middling. I know of over a... Oh, good Lord, how many people? 23. Let's say a few dozen people I know love the movie. And these are people who I know and respect. We were all friends over the last 20 years on message boards back in the day before the internet became what it is today. And the one commonality between them over the last few weeks in my newsfeed on Facebook is how from coast to coast, as well as England, they all absolutely loved the movie. I might not even say I loved it, but I would say I really, 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 really liked it. And I can only shake my head at those two who didn't. As far as the rest of the year, we're going to see Shang-Chi. That's coming out in the beginning of September, early September. The Eternals, of course, is coming out in November, I believe. And most breathlessly awaited of all the Marvel things on the immediate schedule is Spider-Man No Way Home, which is still slated to come out, I believe, in mid-December. See? Look, I mentioned movies after all. All right. Oh, I am so close to being able to wrap this all up in an hour the way it ought to be. So if you like this podcast, maybe it means you like me. And if you didn't, that means you don't. Well, anyway, it means you'd like hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page and you can talk about shows like anything we've mentioned here. I say we, I mean me, or anything else you like to talk about. Now, as far as the podcast itself, you can find us where can you find us? You can find us where podcasts are found. You know, your Spotify, your iTunes, your Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, whatever. You can find all 300, and this will be number 320. All 320 of our podcasts can be found all together at stvdpodcast.podbean.com. And finally, two places I would love if you could follow us, because we really kind of could use the followers to make us a bit more legit. You can follow us on Instagram. Find us on Instagram. We're Serious TV Drama, as one word, Serious TV Drama. And you can find us on Twitter at STVD Podcast. Again, that's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. So that's it for me. I have no idea what the sound quality is going to be like. We'll see. I hope it was not too painful for your ears. I will be back with Dan and from maybe Jamie. I'm not sure. I really got to talk to her about this. But we will be back at the end of the August. I was about to say December. Wow, my brain. August 27th, I believe, we'll be releasing the next Breaking Bad Rewatch podcast, where we will be covering the first 7 episodes of Season 2. Oh, boy, Season 2. And truly looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. The only thing I'm looking forward to more than the first half of that season is when you take a look at what's in the second half of that season. Oh, boy. But we got to do the first half first. And that will be released on August 27th. So if you're watching and listening, yeah, watch the first 7 episodes of Season 2 between now and the 27th. And that way you can listen along and not have to rack your brain trying to remember what you watched 10, 12 years ago. So that's it for me. I hope this was at least somewhat enjoyable. And I wish I had a tagline to end our podcast. That's fun. We should come up with one after all these years. But thanks for listening, and you'll be hearing from us again. Bye-bye.